And away we go. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Together, we welcome you to the show. It's Wednesday, midweek edition, the 23rd of August, 2023. Tom, it looks like we have maybe one really good shot at some thunderstorms today, then a marked decrease in monsoon activity.
It's going to be sporadic, according to the forecast I was just looking at. And there's an interesting thing happening today. We're supposedly going to reach a high sometime in the early afternoon in the mid-90s somewhere. Then the temperature is supposed to drop into the upper 80s later in the afternoon, and I'm not sure why.
Probably the cloud cover coming in, but that is unusual. All right. In January, we'll begin our 14th year with the radio program in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted source for news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Our telephone interviews are presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. The Buckmaster Show contributor on health is Dr. Victoria Mazes, the executive director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona, where she is also a professor of medicine and public health. She's internationally recognized as a leader in integrative medicine. She's committed to helping individuals lead healthier lives and in pioneering change efforts that solve the American healthcare system problems. She is the editor of the Oxford University textbook, Integrative Women's Health, and author of Be Fruitful, The Essential Guide to Maximizing Fertility and Giving Birth to a Healthy Child. Dr. Mazes co-hosts a very popular podcast. It's titled Body of Wonder with Dr. Andrew Weil. You can follow her on Twitter at Dr. Mazes or find her at azcim.org. Dr. Mazes, how are you?
I am doing well. Thank you, Bill. How are you?
Hanging in there. And you're in Northern California, escaping the heat up in Sonoma County. It's so pretty up there.
It is. And I can see the redwoods, which I just think are some of the world's most beautiful trees.
Yeah, we did that trip. I'm trying to think. I think it was last year we flew into Santa Rosa and then drove up the coast up to almost Fort Bragg and that area. It's so beautiful, that winding road. Very reminiscent of kind of Highway 1 at Big Sur, but still different. It's really a beautiful kind of untouched coastline. And I love Sonoma County, which has that feeling of pastoral. And some really neat little towns in there. It's just a beautiful area.
And quite importantly, the temperatures are cooler.
Yes, which is so important because it is very muggy today in Tucson. And speaking of heat and plastics really can be a very unhealthy combination. Let's talk a little bit about what happens when you heat up plastic. We all know, well, I hope we all know, it's not a wise idea in our heat here in the summer, especially to leave a plastic water bottle in the car.
Yeah, so this was some very interesting new research that recently was published. And a guy, I think he's probably Dr. Hussein by now, he was a doctoral student, and he was studying nanotechnology. And he was thinking about plastic because he was also a brand new dad. And so, you know, he had a baby and he was buying baby food and he was thinking about baby bottles. And he decided to bring some of those baby food containers into the lab that he was working in, which was at the University of Nebraska. And what he found was that when you took these containers, even though it said on them, safe to microwave, the containers released millions of tiny bits of plastic. And those were in small enough volumes that they were either microplastics or even smaller, nanoplastics. And this is not good because we absorb these tiny bits of plastic into our bodies. And when we absorb them, they mess with our system.
Yeah, we may all be carrying around, if you live long enough, you may be carrying around a bunch of these nanoplastics. And but, you know, it's really it's horrible to think of, you know, babies ingesting this stuff.
It is horrible. And there's a lot of different risks that people are often not aware of, because sometimes you think like, OK, what's the harm? You know, it's so convenient to microwave things. So what could the harm possibly be? Well, there are a few problems. One is, and I think this is the most important one, that the plastics behave like hormones, which is just so hard to grok. You know, it's such a strange thing to think about, but they are what we call hormone mimics. They are what we call endocrine disruptors. And so they interfere with the normal function of hormones. And this includes male and female hormones like estrogen and testosterone. It includes thyroid hormone. It includes our stress hormone, which is called cortisol. It includes our hormone that's responsible for our blood sugar control, which is insulin. And so these tiny bits of plastic, which we cannot see, we cannot taste, we're really not aware are present, you know, unless we have the kind of technology that he had at the University of Nebraska's lab, we then absorb these into our body. And some of it we excrete. You know, our kidneys are, you know, part of our excretion system, and the microplastics are probably excreted by the kidneys. But the nanoplastics are so tiny that they can slip through the cell membrane, and that's when they act as these endocrine-disrupting chemicals, and they also can essentially coat themselves with proteins and get past our immune system and affect our immune function. So they may increase a risk, for example, of autoimmune disease. So the bottom line takeaway message is, even if it says safe to microwave, if it's plastic, do not put it in the microwave. Transfer it into a glass kind of or into ceramic or heat it on the stove in a pot, but do not microwave it, because it really does dramatically increase the amount of plastic that you are going to be ingesting. And similarly, don't pour, you know, hot water into plastic or hot tomato sauce or, you know, hot stew that you've made, because the heat leads the plastic to move from the container into the food. And that means, again, you are absorbing plastic.
This is another case where the manufacturers are trying to appeal, obviously, to the consumer, make it easier. Everybody wants to put something in the microwave. It's going to be quick. It's going to be easy. But who is regulating all of this, Dr. Mazes?
Well, so this is FDA regulated, and the plastic that's often considered safe for food contact is polypropylene. It's in many food containers, but the scientists who really focus on environmental health disagree. They don't think that there is such a thing as microwave safe plastic. And so even though, you know, the FDA still allows for this, we as consumers can say, I'm going to be more cautious. And yes, you know, some of the food products I buy may come in a plastic container, but I'm not going to heat it up. I'm not going to put it in the microwave. So those very convenient TV dinners, other things, or maybe, you know, you save like your yogurt or cottage cheese container and it's convenient for food storage. You know, if it's in the refrigerator and it's cold, not going to have much of this contaminant moving into the food. But as soon as you put that in the microwave, then you're asking for these tiny particles of plastic to come into your food.
That is really good information. And Tom, on the other side of the glass, just sent me a message. And it's a good question. Is it okay to microwave in glass containers? And for instance, if you had a TV dinner, Dr. Mazes, what would be wrong with taking it out of the plastic container and putting it in a glass container to do it?
That would be a very good strategy, is take it out of the plastic that you've purchased it in and put it in a glass container and microwave it in the glass container. That's exactly the right way to go. Or transfer it into a pot on the stove or in the oven and heat it that way. It's not as quick or convenient, but it's much healthier.
So it is okay. The glass is it is okay to use the glass in the microwave.
Yes, glass is considered inert, and nothing moves from that container. Stainless steel, which you're not going to put in the microwave, but you know you might be putting hot liquids in, and ceramic is also considered inert. So any of those would be much better choices.
Very good advice. I had not thought of that, quite frankly, with the TV dinners. Which I have had a few lately.
So, yeah.
Unfortunately. Anyway.
Be careful, Bill. There's going to be lots of casseroles waiting for you.
Well, I shouldn't have even said that really over on the air because the food's been coming over to the home. A neighbor brought over the other day this beautiful meatloaf with, you know, very comfort food. And I called a few friends. So we've taken care of the meatloaf. And then there was a friend waiting for me when I got home yesterday after the show with all of these beautiful ingredients for a salad, which I enjoyed yesterday. So no. If anyone's listening, I'm fine with food right now.
Well, Bill, this is one of the loving ways that your listeners want to reach out to you in your loss. And I know the next time we talk, we're going to talk a little bit about grief.
We are. And I'm going to forward promote that program. That will be right after I get back after Labor Day. I think we're on in about 2 weeks, maybe 2 weeks from today. But we're going to do a whole hour with Dr. Mazes talking about grief. We're going to be talking about hospice. One of the things I've learned over the past week, people do not want to talk about death, but it's something that awaits all of us. So I'm looking forward to that conversation with you, Dr. Mazes, and we'll be right back with Dr. Victoria Mazes talking about a diet that might help folks with irritable bowel syndrome, IBS.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things. Zocalo Village Studios, our contributor on health, who is on our program. I'm so honored that she is. Dr. Victoria Mays is Executive Director of the Andrew Weil Center for Integrative Medicine at the University of Arizona. And before the break, I mentioned that special 1 hour with Dr. Mays is looking forward to it. We'll be talking about grief and death. And I've been very open and transparent on social media about what has happened in my journey as I try to navigate the very choppy waters of grief, one day up, one day down. Ann's passing was 1 week ago, coming up tomorrow. And I'm going, Dr. Mays's, to my first support grief support group. So that will be an interesting experience. That's coming up Saturday with about a dozen other people. So we'll have lots to talk about, I think, during the hour. And it's a subject that a lot of people do not want to touch with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, and I just think you're doing such a wonderful public service by sharing your experience, you know, your profound loss, and also, you know, what you're doing to navigate that loss, including what you just mentioned, going to a grief support group, which can be such a powerful experience to be with other people who have also had loss.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. Let's move on to our next topic. Irritable bowel syndrome is something at one time or another many adults experience. And now there is something called, there have been IBS diets around for decades, but this is something I had not heard about. Why don't you explain what we're talking about?
Yeah, so, you know, nobody really likes to talk about irritable bowel.
No.
Because, you know, it's associated with belly pain and cramping, things we don't like to say on the radio, like diarrhea and constipation. I'm a doctor, so I say all those things.
<I know. laughs> Yes.
Bloating, sometimes too much gas. And 10 to 15% of Americans suffer from this, and so it's quite common. It's just that we don't bring it up in everyday conversation, but maybe now there's a reason to put it on the radio because there is a very effective dietary strategy that was actually developed by researchers in Australia at Monash University. It's been very well researched at this point. And it's called the low FODMAP diet. FODMAP is an acronym. It's such a funny name, FODMAP. And let me just tell you, the acronym is really a mouthful because it's fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
I knew you at some point in this interview, you were going to have to rise to the occasion and pronounce yeah, those five tongue twisters on the radio.
Yes. Well, they are kinds of carbohydrates, and they're kinds of carbohydrates that people don't digest very well or don't absorb very well. And so Instead, they become fermented by the microorganisms. We've talked about the microbiome. Well, those microorganisms end up fermenting these, and that creates the gas and sometimes leads to the diarrhea or constipation. So if you're on a low FODMAP diet, there are different phases. The first phase, you really are on quite a restrictive diet, which we don't like anybody to be on long term, but short term can really be quite effective in stopping those uncomfortable symptoms.
And what kind of diet are we talking about? How restrictive is it?
Well, it depends a little bit on, you know, how strictly you follow it. But if you're having a lot of symptoms of irritable bowel, if you're really uncomfortable, we recommend being quite strict, at least right at the beginning. So, for example, you're going to restrict foods that normally you'd say, well, that's a healthy food. And in general, they are, but not necessarily for someone who has irritable bowel. So, for example, we will have you avoid fruits that are high in fructose. That's apples, pears, mangoes, cherries, watermelon, figs. Again, these are healthy fruits. There's nothing wrong with them in general, but they're not good for someone who's having a flare of their irritable bowel. We're going to ask you to restrict certain vegetables like garlic, leek, onions. You know, anybody who likes to cook often starts by sauteing onions or garlic, and so it's hard to give up these vegetables. Again, it's not intended necessarily to be permanent. There are some grains that you have to give up. They include rye bread, wheat pasta, because these are high in fructans and therefore can irritate the irritable bowel. Certain legumes like red kidney beans, split peas, falafel, baked beans are things we want you to give up. We want you to give up some dairy, especially soft cheeses, milk, sometimes yogurt, because these contain lactose, and that milk sugar can flare people's irritable bowel. Now, there are still lots of things that you can eat. That's the good news. And there are long lists of what to eat and what to avoid. If you go on the Monash University website or, you know, some of the other websites that are focused on FODMAPs, but there's nothing intuitive about it. So you really need to kind of pay attention to what you're avoiding and what you're replacing it with.
So what about meat? Some of meats and fish?
Most meat and most fish are fine to eat in the first phase, the elimination phase, because meat and fish are not particularly rich in carbohydrates. There is maybe zero carbohydrate in them. They're sources of protein and fat, but not carbohydrate. So they don't have this particular effect. You can also eat quinoa. You could eat eggs. You could eat hard cheese. You could eat citrus fruit or strawberries, broccoli. So it's not like there's nothing to eat, but it is, as I said, not intuitive. You really have to look at the list and figure out what's okay and what to avoid in phase one.
Phase one typically would last how long?
A minimum of 2 weeks. So you do it for 2 weeks. And, you know, for example, someone I saw recently in the clinic, irritable bowel after a viral infection. She'd never had it before, but now she had it with a vengeance and was pretty miserable until she went on the low FODMAPs. Her symptoms cleared up almost entirely in the first 2 weeks. And then we start having her bring back one at a time, because maybe you're still sensitive to onion, or maybe you're still sensitive to wheat. And so one at a time, you bring it back and you see how your body does. We don't want you to be on a highly restrictive diet over a long period of time, because you lose all those healthy nutrients. But you may turn out to be someone who just has to avoid, you know, fill in the blank. Maybe it's garlic for you.
And, of course, this is one approach to managing IBS. I think we should mention there are, I've tried some of them myself, some very popular supplements like enteric-coated peppermint that has been very helpful when I've had a little bit of a flare-up in the past.
Yes, that could be helpful. Some people find if they increase their fiber, that helps. Sometimes people find the reverse. They have to reduce fiber when they're having a flare. Sometimes people find if they eat really small meals, they don't flare, because there's a little bit of a connection between the volume, you know, the amount of the food and whether or not you respond with diarrhea or constipation. Some people find it's a fatty food or a spicy food. You know, as we age, we often figure out, oh, that food just doesn't agree with me. And, you know, we avoid it. For a lot of adults in America, it's milk. You know, we know that we can't, and most people actually on the planet as adults can't digest the sugar, the lactose in milk. And so they just avoid milk. But they do fine, for example, with cheese because that's already partially fermented. They may do fine with yogurt because it's partially fermented. So the lactose is already broken down and therefore they don't get the symptoms. So, you know, people may already know about some of these foods, but the FODMAPs is a way of investigating, are there other things that are creating the symptoms?
All right. And again, the name of the university is Monash. That's
H.
Mm-hmm. Okay, University in Australia. People mm-hmm. find out more about the diet for folks who have IBS. And Dr. Mazes, we'll look forward to your visit with us 2 weeks from today, discussing grief and death, and we're going to have a very good discussion. Thank you very much.
Take good care of yourself, Bill.
Thank you.
We're all rooting for you.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I need it. Everybody's been so incredibly supportive. Dr. Victoria Mazes co-hosts The Body of Wonder, a podcast with Dr. Andrew Weil. You can follow her on Twitter at Dr. Mazes or find her at azcim.org. Coming up next, our University of Arizona climate scientist, Dr. Zach Guido. Again, perfect timing with Dr. Guido as we kind of wind down the monsoon season. We'll have the latest right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona.
all made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show midweek edition. Everybody at Green Things, including the Green Things, are very happy with what has turned out to be a halfway decent, maybe average summer rainy season. We'll talk more about that with Zach Guido in a minute. But Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. When my life settles down a little bit, I will be going over to Green Things to try to resurrect the garden from the terrible hail damage. We've got cactus that just were like taking a beating when we had those two 1-in-100-year weather events within about 10 days at our house in July. Green Things, AZ.com, and their sister business is ZocaloVillage.com. Dr. Zach Guido is with us. Dr. Guido is the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. He's an assistant research professor at Arizona Institute for Resilience, known as AIR, which coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the UA campus, everything from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. And that's a field, Dr. Guido, that I guess when you first chose this field, you know, people thought about climate in very, very different terms, right, Zach?
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, now it's like it's the big issue.
Yeah, I mean,
and when you were starting in school with all this, that was a different kind of story.
Well, the narrative has definitely changed.
Yeah,
for the good, I think, and there's not a loss of excitement thanks to research, and obviously the public is wrapped with attention on these extreme events like we've had this summer,
yeah.
And the monsoon, of course.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get the privilege of talking with you about it.
Yep, we had Hillary giving us a little bit of a monsoon boost. The numbers are looking so far pretty average for the monsoon.
Well, I think this is where the numbers can sort of belie what's actually happening. I mean, it is kind of funny when you look at the Tucson airport, which is the gauge that we all go off of.
Uh-huh.
It's actually, I think, what, it's a little bit above average?
It is slightly above average, pushing close to about 4 inches for the season.
Right, but when you look around, and there's a number of rain stations from the Pima County Flood Control District
right.
to rain loggers, citizen science folks. I mean, it is, the airport gauge is sort of sticks out as like one of the few that are actually above average. And so, you know, across the Tucson metropolitan area, like by and large, it's been a below average to date. You know, it's been a below average across the Southwest in the sort of monsoon region of the U.S. So I think the regional picture is one of, you know, it's the monsoon has struggled. It struggled initially, and this was the story. It came on late. And whenever it comes in late, it's really hard for it to recapture those lost days of rain because we, you know, quite frankly, we just don't get a lot of rain.
No, we don't.
From it. So, you know, on average, it's like every fourth day, 25 days or so in Tucson across like the monsoon season, which is about 100 days, it rains. And when you come in 3 weeks late or something thereabouts, you know, and you miss out on, you know, 3 to 4 days, like it's really hard to capture. And so we've been struggling to come to terms with the below average rainfall. That being said, you know, in the middle of July toward the third week of July, like we're sort of scratching our head, like hoping that it doesn't turn out to be like 2022 where it just sort of, or sorry, 2020. 2022 was really, really quite good.
The pandemic monsoon.
Yeah. 2020 was kind of a monsoon disaster.
Yeah.
And we were hoping that it didn't come in like that. And, you know, August has been a different picture and it's been a welcome relief. Some rain that's taken the top off of the temperatures and, you know, it's really helped. And then of course you mentioned Hillary, which was like a really interesting sort of feature. Didn't it's hard to say Hillary's effect. I think it, we didn't get a lot of the rainfall from Hillary, but it created, I think, some residual moisture in the region and sort of enhanced a little bit of the atmospheric dynamic that allowed, at least for Tucson, quite significant rainfall. When was it on Monday? You know, after the storm sort of
passed. Yeah, Monday, which was the 68th day of monsoon 2023.
Can I talk a little bit about Hillary? Because I think there's an interesting weather feature here.
The first tropical storm to make landfall in 86 years or something.
Right, yeah.
It's landfall in California.
Yeah. It's very rare. And one of the, a couple of the reasons why it's rare is that normally there is still cold water off the coast of California. And when you have a hurricane, and it was a hurricane at one point, and then it sort of degrades into a tropical storm and then a tropical depression and then sort of goes on from there. When you sort of cross cold water, it sort of takes away the fuel pump for the severe storms, and it sort of breaks it down a little bit. And so there's that cool water off the coast of California, which has prevented hurricanes or tropical storms from actually being such when they strike landfall. The other thing is we tend to be in the easterlies, or where the tropical storms or hurricanes begin. They're sort of under the easterly flow, which pushes them west.
Into the Pacific.
Well, what you ended up having was you had this big heat dome set up, which is still persistent over the Midwest, and you've got clockwise movement of air around this big heat dome. So if people can just sort of circle the finger in the air, rotate it clockwise. And then off the West Coast, you had this low pressure system, which goes counterclockwise. And so what you ended up having in between those is this funnel of air that was pushing the storm into California and north. So you had this interesting weather pattern that set up with this high pressure to the east, low pressure to the west, and just this track that funneled Hillary basically from the Mexico border all the way to
British Columbia.
British Columbia.
Yeah.
So that's largely why it's a rare event. And fortunately, you know, I think that there's some success stories here, you know, 80 years ago or whenever, when the last one happened, something like 100 people were killed.
And I don't think we had any fatalities in California.
Right. And I think that's from what I've read, that's the case. There's clearly a lot of damage and a lot of destruction, but importantly, the death toll was not as high. And I think that's reflective of some of the activities, early warning systems, more awareness and preparation, you know, and showing a little bit of society's preparation for these events, which is a good thing. So there's a little bit of a silver lining there.
Yeah, early warning is going to be even more important going forward after what's happened on the island of Maui. There's been so much controversy about why the early warning system, and they have like an air raid sirens that are used for tsunamis. And they did not, I understand, they did not go off in Lahaina and these places, and they should have.
That's true. And that's the other major story, recent story, I should say, that's climate related. That's such tragic. And, you know, there was a situation where you had some, it was somewhat dry before you had a big wind event. And you had I'm not sure if it was a tropical storm or a hurricane at the time.
It was a hurricane, and it was, even though it was not that close to Maui, it was hundreds of miles away, it was producing unstable air big time.
Right, and those wind fields from hurricanes are massive.
Yes.
To the extent that hurricane sort of increased the wind event that probably would have occurred outside of the hurricane, I don't think the hurricane generated that big wind event.
It gave it a little bit of extra
fuel. A little bit of a boost.
And anybody who's been to Maui, especially right at the airport there, that is one of the windiest places. It's really the windiest place of the major Hawaiian islands. A lot of people don't understand that, but it's very windy anyway. on a typical day. And then you had this extra kind of dynamic happening from that hurricane.
Yeah, and fire, you know, there are these hazards like fire, earthquakes, tsunamis that really don't provide a long lead time. I mean, they can, fires in particular, maybe there's a longer lead time than obviously an earthquake, you know, but, you know, it can come up on you and or an individual and, you know, in a matter of minutes, they have to make quick decisions and evacuate. And so, yeah, those sirens, I haven't read too much about why they failed. But
it's cost some. I understand that it's a huge political issue on the in the islands and that, you know, there's a lot of finger pointing going on about why the sirens didn't go off.
And rightfully so. Yeah. I mean, these are things that save lives.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing, a part of that event that I did learn, and this is something that's closer to home too, because it's been part of the California fires, is I believe they think at least the ignition, one of the ignitions was started by a downed power line, you know, and that's happened in, in California as well. So these are fires in particular are really complex. The events that unfold, the destruction, the crises, the hazards that evolve are, you know, a combination of these environmental conditions brought on in part by climate, weather too, and, you know, how we manage and prepare and respond. And so it involves, you know, the human system as well. And they're really complex events.
And the front page of the New York Times, the headline, severe weather ravaging the globe and more looms, dangers of warming, fires, storms, mudslides, and heat waves point to a dire future. But they do point out in the third paragraph that these extremes, actually, no, paragraph four, not all of the extreme weather events can be immediately attributed to climate change. Yeah.
Yeah, and I have mixed feelings about this because I do think, you know, there is a prevailing media narrative out there about
big like time right now.
Global apocalypse from climate. And you know, it's just, you know, it's important to recognize that, you know, humans' influence on the climate is discernible, but it's not the only thing that that influences, obviously, these events. And some situations, heat waves, the temperature side of the equation in terms of what we think about for climate change is more clear and certain than the other side of the equation, the precipitation side of things. There has been a whole science that has evolved recently. It's called attribution science, to try to answer this question about, well, what is the role of human-caused climate change in these extreme events, which do naturally occur. And a lot of times it's talked about not so much in magnitude, but in terms of probability or likelihood. And you know, in a world like a pre-industrial world, like a, you know, Category 5 hurricane, you know, let's say an Irma or Sandy or whatnot, you know, just to take two examples, you know, might have occurred less frequently than, or less likely to occur than it currently does. So we talk about it, or the people that study this, more in terms of the likelihood than the actual magnitude of it.
All right, we're going to take a break right here. More with UA climate scientist Dr. Zach Guido. Always a ton to talk about when it comes to the weather and climate with Dr. Guido. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. Dr. Zach Guido, you a climate scientist with us on the Buckmaster Show, one of our regular contributors, a team that I've put together, pat myself on the back, of putting people like Dr. Guido on the air. We've got about two dozen regular contributors. I think they're pretty swell, and they do a great job. The Atlantic seeing a record burst of tropical storms, Zach, in less than 2 days. I think there at one point were four either tropical storms or hurricanes at one point.
Yeah, and you know, it's been relatively quiet this
activity
summer.
Activity really popped.
Yeah. You know, and one thing is if you look up today, you can see the cloud cover, and that is from a tropical storm Harold that moved in, I think, Corpus Christi.
The Texas coast. Yep. We're getting, is it safe to say, remnants?
Yeah. Yeah, we are. And, you know, I think it's projected to rain in much needed southwestern New Mexico. And I think for us here in Tucson, that cloud cover is going to inhibit some convection that we otherwise might have enjoyed.
And speaking of southwestern New Mexico, thank you for reminding me. And southwest New Mexico means a great place to get away. Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, one of our great sponsors. And look at that. Tom just pulled up the weather over there. Midday in Silver. Well, they're an hour ahead, but they're midday, 70 degrees and rain. So just like you said, Zach. And they have had, it's been kind of dry in that part of New Mexico. So they're getting...
All over New Mexico.
Yeah, so this will hopefully green the Gila National Wilderness up. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Find out about all the stuff to do over there and some great places to stay. So we are kind of getting some, the flow there, it would be the wind from the southeast coming up.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yep.
From the Gulf.
Yeah, and again, this big feature in the Midwest, this heat dome, is really helping to circulate that sort of airflow into our region. I just wish we'd have a little bit more heating today and generate that convection. We have the moisture, just probably not so much the atmospheric instability to lead to some more rain.
And a lot with this kind of cloud cover and this kind of humidity, that isn't typically what you would expect for big storms. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, you never know in the monsoon. I mean, there could be a couple storms pop up here and there.
Yeah.
It's a little difficult to forecast.
You're going to be traveling. We're trying to work something out with you in between some big international trips that you've got, so you can come back, so we can talk about kind of put the wrapping on monsoon 2023, because I believe start date is June 15th. Is it to September 15th or the 30th?
End of September.
Okay.
So what do you think? Do you think this the last part of the monsoon will be above average or below average?
Below average, for sure. I kind of feel like we're going to get some drying for sure after today. And sometimes that you kind of see those big puffy white clouds, but there's not a lot of rain in them. You can see the change happening. Those of us who've lived in the desert long, people always say, well, you don't have change of season. You'll start to feel that, I think, in the coming days, that this transition is happening into our fall and our drier period.
So not very scientific, but I'll give an analog. I queried my friend who's a monsoon historian. I like to call him a monsoon historian, colleague at university. And I was like, what year looks a lot like this monsoon season? What monsoon season looks like this monsoon season? And he picked out 97. And 97 had a good setup in August. I should have queried him about September. But it was also a year in which an El Nino was emerging, one of the strongest El Ninos on record. We have a current El Nino that's brewing. So for people that want to maybe hedge their bets and think about what September might look like, 97 might be a good thing to look at.
And for skiers who have a lot of money, let's put it this way, you've got a lot of disposable income. Maybe there's some skiers out there. Find the next flight to Santiago, Chile, and then down to Patagonia. They have had 4 straight days of record-breaking snowfalls down there. So kind of like what High Sierra had last season.
Yeah, and I think now there's quite a bit of attention on all of the extreme events that are around the globe. And at any one time, that's why it's an exciting thing to study, because there's somewhere massive heat or massive storm or hurricane or drought and this really goes to, I think one of the key challenges as we think about a future, a climate changed future, is thinking about how to make, society more resilient to these kinds of events. And one of my sayings is always that we never did weather well to begin with, and certainly in a supercharged or charged future that where there is weather events like hurricanes that might be like nudged to be a little bit more frequent and a little bit more strong. We've got to do those events better.
All right. Dr. Zach Guido, always a pleasure. Thanks, Zach. And we'll catch up with you at the end of the monsoon. Okay. After today's show, I'm taking time off. A million things to get done, as folks who have been following my ordeal understand. I plan to be back the day after Labor Day. So that will be the Tuesday right after Labor Day. And we will see where we are right there as we continue on. On behalf of Dr. Guido, with me in studio, and Tom, engineering and producing the show, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well.